It's half past eight.
It's half past eight New York time. Time to wake up America and stop the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike presents Information Please. This is a conversational quiz party with four experts providing the floor show and you, the American public, as the quizzical audience. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more, plus a 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your question a bit, don't fret over it. In case of duplication, Information Please uses the question that was received first, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And I'll add up a lucky strike as I introduce our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, unrehearsed, now and forever, Information Please continues on its casual and informal way. The regular experts this evening include our dependable duo, Mr. John Kieran, poobah of knowledge and sports expert, and Franklin P. Adams, light and medium versifier, and conductor of the New York Post's humorous column, The Cunning Tower. Our guests are the charming Englishwoman, Miss Jan Struther, author of Mrs. Miniver, coming to us in a return engagement, and the famous Pulitzer Prize-winning dramatist and man of the theater, Mr. Elmer Rice. Now remember, for each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, before I start, I want to get back for a moment to Mr. Kieran and his bee, which some of you may remember from last week. We had a question which read, is there any creature who has a grandfather but no father? Now, the proper answer, as I understood it, was the drone bee has a grandfather but no father. Now, we've been working for a week on the bee and all his relations, and we're ready to state positively that the drone bee, for good or for ill, is simply without a papa, Mr. Kieran.
Oh, yes,
Mr. Sir. Kieran didn't believe it. Now, we have the assurance of the American Museum of Natural History, and we've got a number of impressive authorities on the honeybee, such as Dr. Phillips of Cornell and Mr. Snodgrass of the United States Bureau of Entomology.
Just a minute.
Mr. Kieran.
You can add me to those authorities.
Well, you're coming a little late on this, Mr. Kieran.
I couldn't have made a worse mistake if I had said that Babe Ruth was the third baseman and a right-handed hitter.
I wouldn't put that past you.
I must say that the fatherless bee certainly made a sucker out of you, Mr. Kieran.
Well, I've known bees and kept them and read about them for years, and how I made that egregious error, I never will understand.
Well, he was a sucker. Where the bee sucks, there suck I.
Mr. Rice.
Well, I was going to say that a lot of the bee pictures that I've seen seem to have no fathers either.
Oh, the grade bee, yes. Well, that finishes up the bee, I believe. And now suppose we start with the program for this evening with a question coming to us from Francis Eccles of Washington, D.C. Now, this is a question based on your knowledge of Mother Goose. I'll give you an example. If I asked you what home remedy was effective for broken heads in Mother Goose, Miss Struther, what would you reply?
Vinegar and brown paper.
Yes. Can you document your answer?
Jack and Jill went up the hill. You know, that
yes,
one.
I know.
And they came down with broken heads.
Mm-hmm.
And they were treated with vinegar and brown
yes,
paper.
Yes, you've got everything except the rhymes and the rhythms. But you have the story. Have what Mr. Rice called the plot, which is the thing you paid for in Hollywood, Mr. Rice. Now, that is just an example. Now, here are the real questions. Get all of them. There are three. Who broke an all-time track and field record? Mr. Kieran.
The cow jumped over the moon.
Well, our sports expert should know that. Thank you. That's right, Mr. Kieran. How was a lack of reverence punished? How was a lack of reverence punished? Mr. Adams.
I took him by the left leg and threw him down the stairs.
Why did you?
There I met an old man who wouldn't say his prayers.
That's it, yes. The lack of reverence was properly punished by being thrown down the stairs. Now, what chicken, gentlemen, favored male customers? Not by any means an unusual situation. Mr. Rice.
Higgledy piggledy, my fat hen.
Black.
Was it black?
I think it was black.
White eggs for gentlemen.
No, just eggs. Just eggs. You're colorblind.
They were white, though.
Legs for gentlemen. Sometimes 9, sometimes 10. Am I right, Mr. Rice?
I wouldn't know about that.
Higgledy piggledy,
my black
exactly.
hen.
Exactly. That's quite right. That gives us 3 out of 3. You find this very easy, Mr. Rice?
No.
Are you wait.
I'm working very hard.
Here is a question from Arnold K. Husquith of Brooklyn. Get 2 out of 3. I'm going to give you the first lines that are spoken in 3 plays. Give me the plays.
The first line of the first play is simply, "Who's there?" Question mark. Who's there? What play?
Hamlet.
That's right. Thank you, Mr. Rice. Hamlet, who speaks the line?
Marcellus, man who's standing on guard.
It's the other one, Bernardo.
Bernardo.
But I think that's pretty good. Who's there? Hamlet, spoken by Bernardo. Very good indeed. Now, here's another. Stop chunking that ball against that there old house. Mr. Rice again?
Tobacco Road.
Tobacco Road. Yes, you're going to say that, Mr. Adams and Miss Struther, I'm sure. That's quite right. Who speaks the lines?
I don't remember that. Well, it's 7 years since I saw it.
It isn't Marcellus.
Since I saw it.
Well, he speaks the lines. Or the line, rather. Now, how about this one? Hello, is this Jack and Charlie? Is Mr. Estabrook there? Mr. Rice again.
No time for comedy.
No time for comedy. Who speaks the lines?
The colored maid. I've forgotten her name. Clementine or something like
good
that.
Good enough. That's 3 out of 3. A perfect score for Mr. Rice. Thank you very much indeed. You apparently do go to see other plays than your own, Mr. Rice.
No, but people tell me about it.
Well, you have spies. Paul O'Camora of this city sends in a geographical question, a very timely one. Can you name 4 out of the 5 seas that border on Greece and the Balkan area? There are 5 of them. Now, you can all work together on this, but don't whisper. Miss Struther.
The Aegean, Adriatic.
The Adriatic makes 2.
The Ionian
makes 3. Do you want to stop, Miss Struther? Perfect score.
I want
score
to stop, yeah.
Want to rest on your laurels?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, Mr. Adams, did you have your hand up? No.
I had those two.
Mr. Rice.
Well, the Black Sea on the Balkans.
The Black Sea is quite okay. Mr. Kieran, there's still one more.
I was
going
to give the Black Sea. How about the sea called the Peloponnesian?
I don't know there is any sea any longer called the Peloponnesian. There used to be a war called the Peloponnesian War.
Caspian.
No, I don't mean the Caspian. Now don't get your... dumb us up. We've got 4 out of 5. Mr. Rice?
The Sea of Marmara borders on Turkey.
I think the Sea of Marmara would not be right. I don't have a map in front of me. But the other sea I was thinking of was simply the Mediterranean.
I said the Mediterranean.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Kieran. It's your modesty that you don't speak loud enough. Speak up. Say Mediterranean, but don't try to spell it. Here's one from N.P. Lowenstein of this city. Very simple question. Give me 3 lines about weeping. This kind of melancholy question about weeping or tears. Mr. Adams?
I have seen the children weeping. Elizabeth Barrett Browning.
That's right. I can't go on with it, but perhaps Mr. Kieran can.
Do you see the children
weeping? Song of the Children, something of that sort. That's quite right. Miss Struther?
Tears, idle tears, I know not what they mean.
Yes.
Tennyson.
That's very good. And Mr. Rice?
Jesus wept.
Yes, the shortest verse in the Bible, Jesus wept. That's quite right. Mr. Adams?
Weep no more, my lady.
Very good. That gives us 4 out of 3. Here's one from F. Dooley of Boston, Massachusetts. This is a very interesting one, Miss Struther and gentlemen. You're going to hear bits of dialogue from 2 well-known plays acted out, one after the other. Just identify the plays if you can. Are you all ready with the first?
Maybe it's the vino. I don't agree with some folks.
I guess I'm just nervous.
I'd be nervous myself if I'd just been married.
Would you?
If I was a girl, I would.
Maybe that's why I'm nervous.
Sure it is. I often think how it must be for a girl taking a big, important step like getting married. Everything new and different and all that.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't let it worry me if I was you.
I won't, Mr. Joe.
That's the idea. Good night.
Good night.
Say, look here, Amy.
I don't remember of giving you leave to use my Christian name.
That's all there is to that, Miss Struther and gentlemen. What's the play? That's all you're going to hear on that one. Any guesses? Mr. Kieran?
Well, if all these theatergoers don't want to guess, would it be a Golden Boy?
No, I'm awfully sorry.
Well, I'm sorry, too.
Did you just make that up out of your own head, Mr. Kieran? Any other guesses? The answer is They Knew What They Wanted by Sidney Howard, which I think has been transferred to the movies lately, Mr. Rice, hasn't it?
Yes, it has, but not with the same dialogue.
Not with that dialogue.
Not with that dialogue? You're positive of that? You remember every line of the movie dialogue? Mm-hmm. How unlucky.
There wasn't any of this in it.
Let's have the... That gives us 1 wrong. I think we're going to lose some money on this. How about the second bit of dialogue? Maybe we'll do better on that.
I wish I were back at school. I don't want to get married.
George, what's the matter?
I don't want to grow old. Why is everybody pushing me so?
Why, George, you wanted it.
Why do I have to get married at all? Listen, Ma, for the last time I ask you...
No, George, you're a man now.
Listen, Ma, you never listen to me. All I want to do is to be a fella. Why do...
George, if anyone should hear you... Now stop, I'm ashamed of you.
Thank you very much. The same actors, Mr. Other and Gentlemen, but a different play. What play? It is not Golden Boy, Mr. Kieran, in case you have that in mind.
Is that another Sidney Howard play?
No, it is not, Mr. Adams.
Sounds like The Silver Cord.
No, it isn't The Silver Cord. It is Our Town by Thornton Wilder. I don't know whether the dialogue is reproduced in the screen version or not, Mr. Rice. Well, that gives us a clean bill of health.
I'll
two wrong
the dialogue
out of two.
Isn't reproduced in the screen.
I
sight unseen.
That's quite possible. A Lucky Strike will send $25 to Mr. Dooley of Boston on that one, plus a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, how about this one? This comes from Mrs. Albert W. Withrow of Chicago. Very simple question. What do the following have in common? I'm going to name four names. Chris Crowfield, Ellis Bell, Henry Handel Richardson, Lawrence Hope. What do they all have in common? Miss Struther.
They're all male pen names of female writers.
That's exactly right. Do you know who each of them is?
No, I only know Ellis Bell was Emily Bronte.
Yes, Emily Bell is... Ellis Bell is another name for Emily Bronte. And who is Chris Crowfield? One of the best-known writers, I think, that has ever been known to this country. Harriet Beecher Stowe. Harriet Beecher Stowe, who wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin under the name of Harriet Beecher Stowe, but wrote some other things under the name of Chris Crowfield. Now, how about H.H. Richardson? Who is she? Well, Henry Handel Richardson is the pen name of Henrietta Richardson Robertson, a well-known English, or rather Australian novelist, a very fine one. And Lawrence Hope. Who is Lawrence Hope?
Write a reverse.
Yes, what verse, Mr. Adams?
Pale Hands, etc.
That's right. It's from... very good. And what's the title of the book?
Song of India.
Well, I think it's Indian Love Lyrics.
Indian Love Lyrics.
Indian Love Lyrics. And her real name was Adele Florence Corey Nicholson. Well, so far, Lucky Strike has lost $25 and one set of the Britannica. It seems an event of quite some importance took place this week out in the country that's famous for its beautiful women and its fast horses. Got that right, haven't I, Mr. Cross?
About the women and horses? Yes, Mr. Fetterman. But the big event of the week concerned another reason for Kentucky's fame. On Monday, December 2nd, the world's largest burley tobacco market opened with colorful ceremony in Lexington, Kentucky. And tobacco experts, gathered from all over the South, saw Lucky Strike, as usual, pay the price to get the finer, lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. Here's an actual tabulation of the figures. On that opening day of the Lexington market, the American Tobacco Company paid 17% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 17% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobaccos sold there. And the best we bought will go to Lucky's. So you see, Lucky's pay what it takes to assure you finer, lighter, milder tobaccos in your cigarette.
Mr. Cross, money talks, and in this case, it said its say in only 53 seconds. Well, how about the second half of the program? Suppose we start it with a question from Cincinnati, Ohio, thought up by Mr. Emmanuel Marx. It's about characters of children's fiction. What characters of children's fiction didn't have the following... listen and find out. What character of children's fiction didn't have a hand? I have to get 3 out of 3 on this. A hand. Miss Struther.
Captain Hook and
Captain
Peter
Hook,
Pan.
Yes, and Peter Pan, that's right.
He had a hand, but he didn't have two hands.
He had one hand. Mm. Yes, I said he didn't have a hand. Didn't have one hand, I should have said.
Yeah.
Mr. Rice.
Humpty Dumpty.
Humpty Dumpty, yes. In Alice Through the Looking Glass. And how about a character who didn't have toes? Didn't have toes. Miss Struther.
The Pobble That Had No Toes by Lewis Carroll.
You've got the right character.
Edward Lear.
Edward Lear, as Mr. Adams and Miss Rice remind us. Mr. Rice remind us. The Pobble Who Had No Toes. Can any of you give me the lines in which the toeless condition of the Pobble is demonstrated? The Pobble Who Has No Toes had once as many as we. When they said, someday you may lose them all, he replied, fish diddle dee dee. Which is a very nice piece of repartee, Mr. Adams, don't you think? That gives us 3 out of 3. Here's a question from Philip G. Birchall of Ferndale, Michigan. Get 2 out of 3 if you can. I think this is a rather interesting question. Now, in certain editions of Shakespeare, the names of the characters who speak the lines are abbreviated, you know, in the dramatis personae at the beginning. From the following abbreviations, consisting of the first letters of each name, you are to name the characters and the plays from which they come. You see, I'm not going to give you the whole name, but just the first few letters. Here's the first set. Oli, Mal, Vio, and Mar. Mr. Kieran.
That would be Twelfth Night.
That's right.
Malvolio, Viola, and whatever other characters you gave her.
Malvolio is one.
Viola.
Viola. M-A-R.
Margaret, the maid. The
her name wasn't Margaret. Almost, but not quite. Mariah.
Mariah.
Mariah. And Oli, O-L-I.
Olivia.
Olivia, yes. That's Twelfth Night. That's exactly right, Mr. Kerr. Now, here's another set of names, or rather abbreviations. Lore, Bass, Gra, Ant. Mr. Adams.
Merchant of Venice.
Merchant of Venice. And can you give us the complete...
Lorenzo.
Yes.
Bassanio.
Good.
Who's the other Ant?
Gra.
Who, Gra?
Gra.
Graciano.
Attaboy. And Ant.
Onio.
Very good. I like the way you economize. How about Bra, Cass, Rod, and Des? Mr. Rice.
Othello.
Othello is right. Can you give us the full names? Bra?
Oh, that's Desdemona's father. I've forgotten his name.
Well, the character is Brabantio.
Brabantio.
Yes. And Cass?
Cassio.
Righto. And Rod?
Rodrigo.
Yep. And Des?
Desdemona.
Not a chance in missing that. That's right. That gives us 3 out of 3. Maybe that turned out to be easier than I thought it was going to be. Ira Strauss of Brooklyn sends this one in. What part of these plants do we eat as a vegetable? Get 2 out of 3. What part of asparagus do we eat? Miss Struther.
The young shoots.
The young shoots, yes. What is a shoot in asparagus? Can you define a shoot for us?
Well, it's the young unopened flower stalk.
Yes, the stem with its leaves. Now, how about Indian corn? What part of that do we eat? Mr. Kieran.
We eat the seed.
The seed. That's quite right. And how about what part do some people eat of garlic? Garlic. Miss Struther?
The root, I think.
No, it wouldn't be the root. It would be the bulb.
Well, yes, I'm...
From which the roots sometimes depend, or whatever you call it. Would that be wrong, Mr. Kieran?
No, I think I...
Are you going to pull a bee on me this evening?
No.
Yes, the bulb would be it. It's a variously shaped bud consisting of a short, thick stem. That gives us 2 out of 3, and what can you do with this one? This comes from Inez Pinkerton of Blue Ridge, Texas. Get 2 out of 3 if you can. Name a work of literature in which first a picture is painted by Fra Pandolf. A work of literature in which a picture is painted by Fra Pandolf. Mr. Kieran?
Isn't that Browning?
You bet.
Fra Pandolf's hand worked busily a day, isn't that it?
That's right. What's the poem called?
Isn't that My Last Duchess?
That's quite right, Mr. Kieran. That's going great guns. Very good. Now, name a work of literature in which a symphony is written by Lewis Dodd. A symphony is written by Lewis Dodd, Miss Struther.
The Constant Nymph.
The Constant Nymph is quite right. And finally, a work of literature in which a house is designed by Philip Bosinney. Miss Struther.
The Forsyte Saga.
The Forsyte Saga by John Galsworthy. I think it's the first part of that...
yes, it is.
The Man of Property, is that what it's called? I'm not sure.
I wouldn't know, but it's the first three bits.
That's right. That gives us 3 out of 3. I think, Miss Struther, and you gentlemen are doing extremely well this evening. I'll see if I can't tear you down now. Here's one from Gene Evers of Wilmette, Illinois. What is being held by the central figure in each of the following famous paintings? Get 3 out of 3 on this. In the first case, we have the painting The Blue Boy, the famous painting by Gainsborough. What's the blue boy holding in his hand? Mr. Adams?
I think a hat.
That's right, a hat.
Probably a Gainsborough hat.
yes, probably. And how about the equally famous painting called The Song of the Lark by Jules Breton? I think many of you may know that painting. Do you know it, Mr. Kieran?
Yes, indeed, I do.
And what is the character hold? What's the...
Well, it's a girl, and it's at dawn, and the worst part of the picture is there's an actual spot indicating the lark in the sky, which is a terrible artistic mistake.
You had to get that in.
Yes, I did. Of course, I can't get in what she carries in her hand. She's facing toward the front of the picture.
Camera.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a sickle.
Oh, that's right.
She's carrying a sickle in her hand. Well, that gives us one wrong. Now, how about Whistler's Portrait of the Painter's Mother? What is the mother holding in her hand? I guess we all know that picture. It's been on one of Mr. Farley's best-selling stamps.
Cliche. Okay.
Holding a cliche in her hands? Miss Struther?
I think she's holding a letter or a piece of paper.
Something much like it. It's a handkerchief.
Oh, well, that's
right. That gives us two wrong out of three, and that makes a lucky strike for Miss Jean Evers to the tune of $25 and a set of the Britannica. All right, how about this one? This comes from this city, from Mr. H. Silverstein. Identify the following. Get all. They have names that sound somewhat alike. Botticelli, Vermicelli, Torricelli, and Corticelli. Mr. Rice, will you start us off?
Botticelli was a Renaissance painter.
Right. Now, how about Vermicelli? Vermicelli or Mr. Adams?
That's a little kind of noodles in soup.
Yes, that's putting it very appetizingly. A little kind of noodles in soup. It's a form of macaroni. And Torricelli? Torricelli? T-O-R-R-I-Celli. Mr. Kieran?
Sounds like a football player.
No, it isn't. Torricelli was the inventor of the barometer. The inventor of the barometer. Now, there's something you've learned, Mr. Other and gentlemen. How about Corticelli? Corticelli, Mr. Adams?
Corticelli is a Corticelli.
All right, Corticelli.
Is a spool cotton or silk.
Yes, it's the name of a silk and thread manufacturer.
And used to be a kitten chasing same.
I think still does. I don't see any reason why the kitten should have stopped. Now, that gives us 3 out of 4, which wasn't quite enough. We were supposed to get all on that. Mr. Silverstein will get $25 and a set of the Britannica. How about this one? This comes from Loy W. Maffitt of Fairfield, Iowa. Name a literary character who came from each of the following places. I'll give you 4 places. Get 3 out of 4 if you can. The first place is Gascony. Who came from Gascony? Mr. Kieran.
Why, Salano de Bergerac for one.
Yes.
Also, D'Artagnan.
For 2, and I bet you can't give me for 3, Mr. Kieran.
Do I have to give you 3 from there?
No, you don't.
Henry of Navarre.
I wouldn't know. It's not on the card. That's quite correct. D'Artagnan, Cyrano de Bergerac, and quite conceivably Henry of Navarre. Now, how about Lantern Yard, a literary character who came from Lantern Yard? That's a tough one. I have a feeling that all the high school children who are listening in now will know the answer to this. I am ashamed of them if they don't.
Is that a Dickens character?
No, it isn't. It is from Silas Marner, George Eliot's Silas Marner. And Silas Marner came from Lantern Yard, you remember, and settled in Raveloe. Do you remember that, Mr. Adams?
No, I do not.
You remember it, Mr. Kieran?
No.
It's a sad night for me when neither of you remember it. Who came from Kensington Gardens? Kensington Gardens. Mr. Rice?
Peter Pan.
Peter Pan, that's right. I ran away to Kensington Gardens, said Peter Pan, and lived a long time among the fairies in Act One. How about Seattle? Who came from Seattle? Mr. Adams.
Addison Sims.
Who was Addison Sims?
He was a memory boy. That is, he was the man who was known as somebody in a memory course. What memory course, I forget.
But I think it was Roth. Thank you, Mr. Rice. I'm sure your memory is better than mine. I think it was Roth. And,
well, if I'd taken the memory course, I'd have learned it, too.
People always confuse that. They think that Mr. Addison Sims was the man with a long memory. But it was he that the man with the memory...
Remembered.
That's right, Mr. Kieran. That's playing ball with me. Remembered. Well,
like
that gives
Frankenstein.
That's 3 out of 4. How about this one? This is from Helen Skurr of Bridgeport, Connecticut. Again, get 3 out of 4 if you can. What periodicals print the following descriptive subtitles? The first subtitle is An American Institution. What paper or magazine is that? Has that as a subtitle. An American Institution. It is, too. Well, name an American institution. Miss Struther.
It ought to be the New Yorker, but I don't think it is.
Thank you very much. It's the Saturday Evening Post. When we're as old and respectable as the Saturday Evening Post, perhaps we'll call ourselves an American institution, too, Miss Struther. Here's another. The London Charivari. The London Charivari. Oh, we have 4 hands on that. I'm sure Miss Struther knows it. Mr. Rice.
Punch.
Right. Punch. What is a charivari, Mr.?
It's a wedding feast, I believe.
Not a wedding feast, exactly, Miss Struther.
It's a mix-up, something like a goulash or a...
Well, that's an extended meaning. Mr. Kieran?
A charivari is a party put on by the persons who are not being married to annoy the people who are being married.
Yes.
And I think it's charivari.
Really? Miss Struther, is it charivari?
Because here they call it, but in America they call it a chivalry.
Chivalry.
Yes, but in the dictionary they call it a charivari.
Well, I wouldn't know about that.
Miss Strother, what do you say in England?
In Bouverie Street, EC4, they call it Charivari.
Well, that settles it. In EC4, Mr. Adams, they call it Charivari. Now, how about this subtitle, A Journal of Opinion? A Journal of Opinion, Mr. Rice.
New Republic.
The New Republic, yes. Well-known weekly. And finally, A National Weekly. What periodical? Mr. Adams.
Collier's.
Well, that gives us 3 out of 4, which is all we were required to get. I think
it's known as the National Weekly by Collier's.
Did I say a National Weekly? Oh, I've got to get my article straight. I'm awfully sorry.
That's Collier's idea.
All right. See what you can do with this one. Construct a Frankenstein monster. Mr. Thomas Lambiese of Brooklyn wants you to do this. Made of metals from phrases in common use. For example, a heart of gold. Give me 3 or 4 similar phrases. Mr. Curran.
An arm of steel.
That would be very good. Miss Strother.
A man of metal.
Well, I said that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Name the one with a specific metal in it. Mr. Adams.
Hearts of oak.
Hearts of oak. All right. Mr. Curran.
Hearts of lettuce.
Feet of lead.
Feet of lead, yes. Carrying a nickel cigar in his mouth, Mr. Curran. Mr. Rice.
Cheese at the copper.
Goodness gracious. Mr. Rice. You have nerves of steel, Mr. Rice. Let's see. How about a tin ear? That would give us another. Brass knuckles might be still another. And maybe a mercurial disposition. How would that be? Is that all right? Can you think of any others?
Iron in the soul.
Iron in the soul. That's a very poetical one, Mr. Adams. Very good. Well, I think Mr. Kieran in particular will be interested to hear that there are some other experts in this world who have wonderful memories. Tell him who, Mr. Cross?
They're the tobacco experts, Mr. Kieran. And what they remember so vividly is the grades of tobacco they've seen the different cigarettes, Kieran. And what they remember so vividly is buy at the auctions. Yes, and the prices paid. Now, when Messrs. Tobacco Experts step up to the cigarette counter, those memories of 1,001 tobacco auctions don't desert them. No, they know perfectly well the kind of tobacco they'll smoke in cigarette A, cigarette B, and so on. That's why it means so much that the overwhelming majority of them choose Lucky's for their own cigarette. In fact, sworn records show that over twice as many independent experts, auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen smoke Lucky's exclusively as smoke all other cigarettes combined. Let your memory dwell on that fact the next time you step up to the cigarette counter. Remember, the experts see who pays the price to get the finer, lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. They see and they smoke Lucky's 2 to 1.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. And Lucky Strike announces a total loss of $75.03 of the Encyclopedia Britannica this evening. Miss Strother and Mr. Rice, will you accept Lucky Strike's thanks for joining the party this evening? That tried and true triad, Kieran, Levant, and Adams, will be with us next week. And as our guest, we present the well-known Harvard anthropologist, Ernest Albert Houghton, author of, among other books, Twilight of Man. Now remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. If the question stumps our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your letters to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue of this city. And now a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer of Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, fully interpreted, ladies and gentlemen, means Lucky's pay higher prices for the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. With independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, warehousemen, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2 to 1.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.